We've just published the book, The Adventures of Lola Badiola. It's the perfect complement for this podcast. It includes complete transcripts, explanations, and quizzes. So buy it now on Amazon. Hello and welcome back to The Adventures of Lola Badiola. In the last chapter, Lola learns the disturbing news that JJ plans to sell the company to Tech Spania. And she ends the day in a local bar downing a shot of tequila. In this chapter, we're going to find out more about the man with the gun who sat down next to her at the bar. So here we go.
The Adventures of Lola Badiola, Chapter 48. Corruption. It took a moment for Lola to recognize the man who was sitting next to her. He was one of the agents from Interpol who had questioned her about her involvement in the hacking of SMZ and Tech Spania.
Guthman Thunthonegi, said the man.
I know who you are. What do you want?
I gave you my business card the last time we spoke. I had hoped that you would call me.
Lola was on her guard. She couldn't understand why an agent from Interpol would approach her in a bar at midnight. He sensed her tension and tried to put her at ease.
I'm originally from Laredo. I used to spend my summers working on the fishing boats in Santonia. I knew your father.
Lola remained distant and suspicious. She thought about calling Gonzalo. He had instructed her to contact him if Interpol ever approached her again. But she didn't feel threatened by the old man, and the shot of tequila was already filling her heart with courage. She remained silent and let the agent make the next move. Thunthonegi took a sip of his rum and coke, then lowered his voice and said,
I need your help. Do you have 5 minutes to hear my story?
Lola raised an eyebrow. It had already been one of the most dramatic days of her working life. Now it was taking a turn for the surreal. She had no idea where the conversation was going to lead, but her innate curiosity needed to be satisfied. She asked the barman for a bottle of beer and then turned her body in the direction of the agent.
Go on then. I'm not an expert in cybercrime. I was transferred to the department 3 years ago. I'm just passing time until I retire and claim my pension.
The agent looked around the bar to check that nobody was listening. Apart from a young couple making out in the corner and the disinterested barman, they were alone. He pulled his stool nearer to Lola's, then he leaned in until he was on the verge of invading her personal space. He cleared his throat and started his story.
Corporate corruption is my bread and butter. For almost 30 years I worked in the anti-corruption department of Interpol. I was based in different cities in South America, investigating Spanish companies who were growing their business in the region. What is considered corrupt in Madrid is considered normal practice in places like Caracas, Managua, Asunción. What we call a bribe, they call a commission. What we call blackmail, they call persuasion. So by whose rules do you play? Yours or theirs? Some foreign companies take a cynical approach. They say, when in Rome, do as the Romans. Others take a moral stand. They simply refuse to enter markets where the standards of regulation are lower than their own. Then there is a third type of company, the one that wants the best of both worlds. They want to build factories without paying bribes. Your father chose the third option.
The agent paused to take the tiniest sip of rum and coke. He knew how to make his listeners feel comfortable, how to feed them the right amount of information with the right number of pauses. After 30 years of interrogating white-collar criminals, he understood the psychology of the professional mind. He ran his fingers over the stubble of his chin and continued.
Your father was clean, and he expected everyone around him to be clean. He denounced the politicians who engaged in corrupt practices. He publicly criticized foreign businesses who played by the local rules.
Lola was now fully invested in the story. She knew that her father was working hard to grow the South American business before he passed away, but she didn't know the details of the problems he encountered. The agent continued,
"When a high-profile businessman or politician, particularly one who takes a stand against corruption, suddenly dies of a heart attack, his death needs to be investigated."
The agent leaned forward, lowered his head slightly, and gently took hold of Lola's arm.
"This didn't happen in the case of your father. When I insisted on an autopsy, I was ignored. When I started to make a noise about a cover-up, I was transferred to the cybercrime department in Madrid. I'm now 4 months away from retirement. Before I leave the force, I want to know what really happened to your father, and I think you might be able to help me."
Lola was speechless. She didn't know how to react. Was the agent being genuine or manipulative? Was this a true story or was it a setup? If it was true, who was responsible for the death of her father? Why had the authorities covered it up? And why hadn't she asked more questions at the time? She knew that she needed time to process the information, time to consider its veracity. She summoned all her strength of character and composed herself.
"That's an interesting story, Mr. Thunthanegi. But the truth is, my father died of natural causes. I myself brought his body back from Lima, and I wouldn't be surprised if the pressure of being harassed by people like you contributed to his death."
She took a 20-euro note out of her wallet and threw it on the bar.
"You want my help? Buy yourself another rum and coke."
Then she got up from her stool, walked out of the bar, and headed straight over to Concha's house. The agent didn't follow her. He paid for the drinks and headed home, leaving the 20-euro note for the barman. He knew that Lola would be back in contact with him, sooner rather than later.
We know from earlier chapters that Lola's father, Salvador Badiola, was a good man and a very successful businessman. We know that he was doing business in South America when he died of a heart attack. And we also know that Lola brought back his body for burial in Spain. Is it possible that he died under suspicious circumstances? The agent from Interpol seems to think so. But this is something that Lola does not want to contemplate and cannot process at that exact moment. So let us just focus on the English language lessons of this episode. And we will start off with this simple expression.
Lola was on her guard. She couldn't understand why an agent from Interpol would approach her in a bar at midnight.
When you are on your guard, you are alert and attentive, prepared for something unexpected to happen. You are careful not to be tricked or misled. For example, when you travel on the metro in a city centre as a tourist, you might be on your guard because there are pickpockets operating on the trains. Pickpockets are the people who are trying to steal your wallet from your pocket without you noticing. In this case, Lola is on her guard because she doesn't trust the man from Interpol. Okay, let's follow this expression with an everyday idiom. Listen carefully.
Corporate corruption is my bread and butter. For almost 30 years, I worked in the anti-corruption department of Interpol.
If something is your bread and butter, it is what you do every day in order to earn a living. It is something that you are very familiar with, something that you have expertise in. In this case, corruption is the agent's bread and butter. Investigating corruption is the way that he has made money throughout his career. It is his area of expertise. Okay, let's talk a little bit more about corruption. Have a listen to this again.
What is considered corrupt in Madrid is considered normal practice in places like Caracas, Managua, Asunción. What we call a bribe, they call a commission. What we call blackmail, they call persuasion. So, by whose rules do you play? Yours or theirs?
This is an interesting dilemma that multinational businesses face. Do they have a global set of standards and values? Or do those standards and values vary, differ, depending on the country in which they are operating? Do they do business the same way in Norway as they do in Angola? Can they do business the same way in Norway as they do in Angola? These are interesting dilemmas that multinational companies have to consider. Now, in the paragraph that we've just listened to, the Interpol agent mentions three cities: Caracas, Managua, and Asunción. How good is your knowledge of geography? These are all capital cities of South American countries. Which countries are they? Let me give you some clues. Caracas is officially known as Santiago de León de Caracas. It is 1 kilometer above sea level and has a population of almost 3 million people. And it is considered to be one of the most dangerous cities in the world. It has one of the highest per capita murder rates in the world. And it is the capital of Venezuela. Okay, the next city was Managua. It is located on the shores of Lake Managua. It has a population of just over 1 million, and it is the capital of Nicaragua. And finally, Asunción. It's a little bit more difficult. It's a little less well known than the other two. And it is the capital and largest city of Paraguay, with a population of just over 500,000. Now, these cities are all relatively corrupt places to do business. In fact, the countries are considered to be relatively corrupt on a global scale. As we discussed in a previous chapter, there is a non-government organization called Transparency International that calculates a corruption perceptions index. It is the most widely used global corruption ranking system in the world. It measures how corrupt each country's public sector is perceived to be, according to experts and business people. So let's have a look at those three countries. Venezuela. It is almost at the very bottom of the ranking. It is in 177th place. Nicaragua isn't very much higher, in 164th place. And Paraguay comes in at 128th, so slightly higher in the most recent analysis. Now, what is corruption? How do you define it? Well, Transparency International defines it as the abuse of entrusted power for private gain. It is a politician enriching himself or herself at the expense of the general population. Now, there are a couple of interesting words in the previous paragraph related and connected to corruption. The first was a bribe, and the second was blackmail. So let me explain those two terms. A bribe is a secret payment to a public official from a private individual such that the private individual gets an unfair and probably illegal benefit. So, for example, a local politician receives a brown paper bag full of cash from the president of a construction company. And as a result of that, the local politician gives the construction company a license to build on what was protected land. This is a classic case of bribery. The other interesting word in the paragraph related to corruption was blackmail. Blackmail is the demand of money or some other benefit in return for not revealing damaging information about somebody. That is blackmail. So there you go, two terms that are related to corruption, bribery and blackmail. How corrupt is your country? You can discover on the Transparency International website. Just search for the Corruption Perceptions Index to find out exactly where your country or the country that you're currently living in is ranked. Okay, let's move on. Listen to this expression here.
Some foreign companies take a cynical approach. They say, when in Rome, do as the Romans. Others take a moral stand. They simply refuse to enter markets where the standards of regulation are lower than their own.
When in Rome, do as the Romans. It's a self-explanatory idiom that encourages people to adapt their behavior to the environment in which they find themselves. For example, I used to have lunch at 1 o'clock in the afternoon when I lived in London. Now, I have lunch at 3 o'clock in the afternoon because I live in Madrid. I am adapting to the environment in which I find myself. When in Rome, do as the Romans. Now, another way of looking at this is, if your business is operating in a systematically corrupt country, do you play by their rules? Do you operate the same way as the locals do? Do you believe that when in Rome, you should do as the Romans? That is a dilemma that a lot of multinational companies have to face. Okay, here's another cool business expression.
He knew how to make his listeners feel comfortable, how to feed them the right amount of information with the right number of pauses. After 30 years of interrogating white-collar criminals, he understood the psychology of the professional mind.
What do we mean by white-collar criminals? What is the origin of this expression? Well, in the United States, traditionally, work has been split into two categories, professional and manual. In other words, you work in an office or a factory. Now, a person who is professional working in an office generally wears a white shirt with a tie and therefore has a white collar. A person working in a factory generally wears a blue shirt without a tie, and therefore has a blue collar. So white collar and blue collar have become ways of distinguishing not just between types of profession, but also between class of people. Professional class versus working class. When we talk about white collar crime, we are therefore talking about crimes committed by professionals. For example, corporate fraud, money laundering, and illegal hacking. And not crimes committed by ordinary people, such as car theft, assault, or robbing somebody's house. White collar versus blue collar. White collar crime versus blue collar crime. Okay, let's move on to a related phrasal verb. Here we go.
When I insisted on an autopsy, I was ignored. When I started to make a noise about a cover-up, I was transferred to the cybercrime department in Madrid.
A cover-up, that's the noun. And to cover something up, that is the phrasal verb. And it simply means the systematic concealment of a known crime. For example, if the management of a company is aware that some of their employees have been stealing from clients, but want to avoid any negative publicity, they might cover up the crime. In other words, they will destroy the evidence and force all of those involved to be silent about the matter. They will cover up the crime. Okay, we have one final expression to end this chapter. Here we go.
The agent didn't follow her. He paid for the drinks and headed home, leaving the 20 euro note for the barman. He knew that Lola would be back in contact with him sooner rather than later.
To do something sooner rather than later is just an emphatic and somewhat dramatic way of saying simply soon. So in the chapter, we could have written, he knew that Lola would be back in contact with him soon. But that doesn't sound nearly as dramatic as saying, he knew that Lola would be back in contact with him sooner rather than later. You see what I did there? So alternatives to this phrase could be before long or in the near future. And on that note, we come to the end of today's session. If you would like to improve your business English in a more formal manner, join Marina and me for live, interactive and fun classes through our online platform. Just click on the link that you will find in this episode description in your podcast, and you will go straight through to Club Grattan. And we hope to see you there. We also hope that you can join us for the next episode of The Adventures of Lola Badiola. Until then, keep bringing English into your life, and we'll see you again sooner rather than later.